everybody, and welcome to Super Podcast episode 101, the 007 edition. I am your host, Bond, Marcy Bond, because I'm taking a break from being Super Marcy for this podcast. And with me, as always, is the one, the only, the absolutely terrible Australian Agent 009, for some reason, Bede.
I prefer the term 00 Bede, Marcy.
I chose 9 for no other reason than that was the first number that came to my head.
Fair enough. I'm good, thanks, Marcy. How are you?
I don't know if I asked how you were, but good to know. I should say I hope you had a very happy birthday, and hopefully the presents I sent you frickin' arrive in the mail already.
I checked the mail today, Marcy. Still no sign of presents, unfortunately.
Has the mailman been yet?
I did. I went down there earlier, and there was no mail. When I went back there about half an hour ago, there was only, like, one letter in the mailbox.
Well, it could be delivered by courier, so...
Probably, yeah.
You might have to check later. But anyway, hope you had a nice birthday.
I did, Marcy.
Birthday.
I had a really good birthday, thank you very much. And I did a bit of birthday shopping the other day, and I bought tons of Blu-rays. And one box set in particular has something to do with the theme of the podcast that we're doing tonight.
Yes, and I will steal that box set off you.
Of course, you can borrow it after I watch all of them, which would take at least another 5 years from now, because it takes me forever to watch my Blu-rays.
Unlike me, who watched all 23 movies in 4 days.
Yeah, but that's because you're insane, Marcy.
I am, and that I'm not doing that again. okay, so we aren't alone for the 00 podcast. We have two guests, and I'll introduce our returning guest, who is 00 Behave.
Oh, Behave.
The Nick... a.k.a. Sean Connery impersonator, Bosworth.
Hello, Marcy.
Sorry.
Hello, Bede.
Oh, hi, Sean Connery.
Oh, I could be Morgan Freeman for your birthday.
Awesome.
But I prefer to be Sean Connery tonight.
And I'll be Morgan Freeman.
Very nice to meet you, Morgan.
I'm pretty good, thanks, Sean Connery.
Shall we spend the remainder of this podcast making Marcy laugh?
We can talk about how we both starred together in Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves.
I don't remember that.
Well, you only showed up until the last 5 minutes of the movie.
That's true, but I was definitely the best part.
Exactly.
Okay, I can't breathe, anyway, so thank you.
Hi, Marcy. Hi, Bede.
Hi.
Oh, hi.
Hi.
I don't know well.
Hi, actual Nick.
Yeah, I think the last time we were on, Nick, was it the Dark Knight Rises episode?
Yeah, actually, I think it was.
Yeah, but we've only had, like, 3 episodes since then.
Yeah, that's true.
And we've been slacking off a bit. When we do our, like,
One person at a time.
I was going to say, like, when we, Marcy and I do our eventual highlights of the year episode, it'll probably be, like, 5 episodes we'll be talking about.
Well, yeah, pretty much. I mean, I was away for 3 months.
Also, congrats on the 100th episode and
thank you.
Celebration recently, and I was definitely a part of that highlight.
Yes, thanks for falling asleep, Nick.
Everybody recognizes that one.
Yes. And we do have another guest. It is his very first time on a podcast, as well as, obviously, Super Podcast. And he's obviously losing his, popping his sherry. That's the way we say it. And Bede just popped it for him because Bede really likes to do that.
Well, it's hilarious.
So please welcome EJ, a.k.a. Puck Bond 007 on, I don't know if that was on the forums at Joe Blow, but that's definitely his YouTube nickname.
My name is Bond, Puck Bond. I can't do economy as good as Nick.
But, nice to meet you,
Marcy.
Anytime. Yeah. Thanks for joining the madness.
Be and gentle with me.
Well, we know that won't happen. Hopefully we won't talk over each other too much. It is a bit difficult with Skype lagging and everything. But let's get right to it. You know, this is a very Bond kind of year because it was the 50th anniversary as well as the release of Skyfall and all the Bond movies coming out on Blu-ray. I know some of them were out on Blu-ray, but they officially released every single one in a big set and then separately and then in other sets. So, yes. And as mentioned, I watched all the movies in 4 days, which ended in me seeing Skyfall right after I finished Quantum of Solace. So, yes, everything should be fresh in my mind, but at this point, all the Bond movies have just, like, melted into one. So forgive me if I make any mistakes.
23 movies in 4 days, though.
Yeah. So if I make any mistakes, that's probably why, because I'm just so confused. I can't keep anything straight. So let's get right to it with my personal favourite Bond, Sean Connery. And he made six. If I'm wrong, tell me.
Yeah, not including...
Not including Never Say Never Again.
Never Say Never Again, yeah.
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 Okay, so...
not that one.
Mr. Connery, who I'm not going to impersonate, he was the first, I guess, on the official capacity with Dr. No, and then his final one with... not including the other one, was Diamonds Are Forever. So he lasted, what, 9 years? It was a 9-year stretch as Bond?
Yeah, roughly.
So well, maybe we'll just go around and we can all sort of mention what our favourite Connery movie was. I'll go first because I'm talking. Mine, and especially getting clarity after watching them all, I would have to actually go with From Russia with Love as being my favourite Connery. I just think that movie is phenomenal and I think it just works on so many levels and I love it and I think he was fantastic as Bond. We'll pass it off to Nick. What was your favourite Connery movie?
I'll be honest with you, I remember the first one I watched was Goldfinger, and for a long time that was my favorite. However, much like you, From Russia with Love, I consider it to be probably the best Bond. It's in my top three, but I'd say of Connery, it is my absolute favorite. And one of the key reasons, on top of being an amazing story and amazing settings, and you know, finally Sean Connery got the his edge, he found it, was the legendary Robert Shaw, and as playing the Spectre villain. And he was fucking brilliant. As some consider him not to be the main villain, but I just think he just makes the whole film legendary.
He's
so,
kind
yeah.
of that memorable that he kind of ends up being, like, I don't know, the main villain or the one that people walk away with remembering the most from that movie.
Yeah, he doesn't really have that much screen time other than, you know, see him training and seeing him on the train, but he matches Connery in intensity. As Red Grant, he's just fucking fantastic. So yeah, For Russia with Love, definitely my fave.
Okay, and EJ, what is your favorite Connery?
My favorite is Goldfinger. It's my favorite Bond film of all time, period. I think it's just the best. The first half hour, the first like 5 or 6 scenes, they're all just perfect. It's the ultimate Bond movie, in my opinion. It has the best Bond villain, the best henchman, and probably the best Bond girl name of all time in Pushy Galore.
maybe Nick can say that.
Pushy Galore. Pushy Galore, that's her name. I find myself deeply aroused.
Okay, while I try to breathe.
On a Blackman.
That was brilliant. Yeah, I will say that Goldfinger is definitely one of my favorites, and there's a lot to love about that movie. So I will 100% support that decision. But we'll see if we support Bede's decision. What is your favorite Connery?
Actually, my favorite Connery film is actually his fourth one, Thunderball, which is a lot of fun on so many levels. Mm-hmm. And I think this is like sort of the previous three films kind of, while they're all good in their own ways, but they sort of at that time were sort of like taking their time to tell the story. But this one, there's a sense of urgency throughout this one, because this is, I think at the time, this was like the really first Bond film that was on a big epic scale. And it had featured some really fantastic action sequences, particularly the underwater sequences, which were just amazingly done.
Mm-hmm.
And like the fact that it's Bond has to stop Spectre because they're pretty much stolen these atomic bombs and they're threatening to destroy the world. So Bond has to go in and stop them. And so, like I said, that's the whole sort of sense of epicness to it, and as well as a sense of urgency, because it's sort of a race against time for Bond to stop him. And it's just a lot of fun. It is without a doubt my favorite Connery one. And it's also one of my top five favorite Bond films as well. It's just pure fun, and it's action packed from beginning to end.
Great villain as well, and yeah, it was really ahead of its time.
Yeah. Yeah, and it also, I think, at the time, is still the only Bond film to win an Oscar for its visual effects.
For visual effects, yeah, that's for sure.
Yeah, I'm not going to, like, go into
trivia. Awesome theme song by Tom Jones.
Oh, I love that theme song so much.
Sex bomb.
Yeah, that was totally it. We can definitely talk about some of the themes a bit later on in the podcast, but I will say Thunderball is a really good film, and the underwater stuff is filmed so awesomely. I mean, awesomely. I can't even describe it. It's just the way all that stuff is shot was just amazing, especially for the time as well.
Mm-hmm.
Before we move on,
I think Thunderball is a bit too long, to be honest.
I won't argue that point. It is kind of long.
It can drag a little bit.
Bond movie should be 2 hours max, and it has the same problems that other Bond movies have that are that long, I think, as well. But it's still a good film. I think Thunderball is a great film, like you guys said.
Yeah, my only issue ever is Bond movies can be a little bit long, especially if they are over 2 hours, especially notice this fact trying to watch them all in such a short amount of time. Which it was just like, you know, I'm wanting to, you know, this marathon to move quickly, but it can't because everything's like 2 hours plus just about.
It's a lot of story to get through.
Yeah. I mean, I know some of them, you could definitely lose, you know, a good 10 minutes, but they're still enjoyable all the same. Before we move on, does anyone want to mention any other of Connery's movies?
Like in regards to like something else that he did that we love, or just like, because I mean, you Only Live Twice is also a very underrated, and I mean it's got a lot of gadgets, but I mean it was our main introduction to even though he had been suggested throughout the other films, was Ernst Blofeld, probably one of the most famous villains of all time, and Donald Pleasance came out as him in You Only Live Twice, and that was definitely one of my top favorites.
And he was the best Blofeld.
Oh, God, yeah. I mean, and to this day, he's still parodied, and he's still compared, and he was just absolutely the best. Donald Pleasance, love you.
Yeah, he was. He's the kind of actor that just put everything into whatever role he was playing, so he always just delivered the goods. I actually want to mention Diamonds Are Forever because I actually really, really love this movie. And I know it can be one that isn't, you know, a big favorite amongst some people, but I just really enjoy it and have a lot of fun with the movie. And I had a blast rewatching it as part of a marathon. So I just thought it was worthy of a mention. EJ or Bede have anything they want to add in before we move along?
I think we have something about Dr. No, because obviously it was the first one.
It was the first one.
Oh, yeah. Gotta love the original. It set a lot of boundaries.
It's a very subdued Bond compared to a lot of the ones that came after it.
But it set up a lot of themes like Spectre and Green stuff Owl. Like that. And the villain sort of set a standard for villains.
Yeah, he's an iconic character as well.
World domination.
Same old dream.
Bede, do you have any last words?
Definitely my other favorite Connery Bond is, you know, what you guys said, Goldfinger, which is definitely the one that sort of... It's pretty much what every Bond film afterwards would try to replicate or follow the formula, because it sort of had, you know, the big major villain and all the sort of memorable sort of set pieces, and as well as memorable characters. So that's definitely one of my favorites, Goldfinger.
I just want to add, with You Only Live Twice, I kind of, rewatching it, I don't know if it was kind of just racial stereotyping a bit, but it's a movie that definitely kind of felt like a product of its time.
They're all a product of their time. I mean, those were the days when,
well, yeah,
you know, Connery slapping a girl's ass was considered, you know, the thing. Slaps her ass in Goldfinger. I mean, it's classic and it's hilarious, but back then that was acceptable. Now,
the
feminists, people would go nuts.
Well, yeah, I mean, rewatching it, just about every movie, Bond slaps a woman or a woman gets slapped, pretty much.
Even in the Roger Moore days. Things.
Oh, yeah, you know, it sticks out a lot, but I just mean as far as, I don't know, just how... you know, looking at that culture just felt very much, you know, to that time of how they looked at it. And for some reason, I think they must have, like, made John Saxon look like Sean Connery did in this movie when he was in Enter the Dragon. Because you look at Connery in this and you look at John Saxon, they have the exact same look.
Opium.
So, there you go.
I love it.
We'll say goodbye to my favourite Mr. Connery. We'll go over a man who only had one Bond movie, and he also happens to be an Australian, and Bede did meet him earlier this year. And that was George Lazenby for On Her Majesty's Secret Service.
One of my all-time favourites.
It's actually one of my least favourites. And I'll explain why. I actually really love the first act and the final act. I'm not a big fan of the middle. And I kind of just... I don't really understand Bond's thinking on what he's doing in the middle of this movie and how he just decides to bed, like, two chicks straight away in a row when he's, like, meant to be in love and stuff. I think Lazenby did a pretty decent job, however.
I totally agree with you. And just adding on to that, I think one of the reasons that most Bond fans love it so much, if you know the novel, it's so close.
It's very
close. One of the actually best followed.
Yeah, I haven't read it, but I've heard that they pretty much don't leave anything out and it's very, very close.
No, exactly. And it was directed by an editor and it was paced beautifully. The cinematography was fantastic. I thought Lazenby did a really good job. It's just some people didn't think so. Others thought it was brilliant. It's one of those underdogs that in recent years has really come back, and it is absolutely one of my all-time favorites.
Well, I think it does divide people a lot. It's not like I don't like it. I really enjoy the movie a lot. I think it just happens to be one of my least favorites. But I actually think, you know, like, Tracy is an interesting, I guess we'll call her a Bond girl, and someone that he falls for and just drop dead gorgeous woman. And I think there's a lot of interesting set pieces. And actually, the ski racing is not at all goofy. And I kind of remembered it being goofy, but it totally wasn't. And Kojak made an interesting Blofeld. I always forget the actor's name, Telly something. Someone help me.
Savalas.
Thank you. I just call him Kojak because he is Kojak. I do think the ending is really heartbreaking for a lot of reasons. And I should One add that, you know, Moneypenny just does a great job in this movie as well. I'm calling a character name, but you know what I mean.
The Lois Maxwell? Like,
yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and, you know, Moneypenny is, you know, throughout Bond, one of my favorite characters.
She's from Kitchener, Ontario, actually. She's, like, like half an hour from where I am.
Yeah.
Canadian girl.
How about EJ and your thoughts on this one?
I actually put it in the middle. I echo a lot of what Nick said. I think the ending's fantastic. It's really the only Bond film where the ending sort of makes me tear up. That shot of Moneypenny as Bond is getting married always sort of like moves me for some reason. And it has a couple of my favorite moments in the franchise. When Bond sort of pretends to quit and he goes back to his office and he's like going to his desk and he pulls out all these little items and gadgets from previous films and you hear like the music from those films. That's a great moment. And there's a shot when they attack the mountaintop Pete's Gloria. Bond is like sliding on the ice, shooting away, and the Bond theme is going. That's an awesome moment. It's a good film, but I don't think it's one of my favorites.
And Bede, seeing as you met George,
indeed.
What do you have to say on your experience of meeting him in the movie itself?
Well, like it's when I met him, he was taller than me, so. That was the main thing. Well, like, I only met him for like a couple of seconds, but he seemed like a really cool bloke, and got a pretty awesome picture with him, which you can find on my Facebook page.
It's on the podcast photos as well. The podcast page's photos. We heard that Lazenby is still very much a skirt chaser, even in his in his 70s.
Yeah, definitely.
I'm kind of glad I didn't.
I was going to say, I think he did a pretty solid job. Like, he had his couple of off moments, but I think if he was given the chance to do maybe a couple more Bond films, I think he would have found his footing as well. Mm. But I do agree with you that I think the first half and the second half of the films are the best. It does tend to drag a little bit in the middle section.
Mm.
But overall, it's still a pretty solid film. And I agree, the ending is definitely one of the saddest endings for any Bond film.
Mm.
And sort of like Tracy's death would actually affect Bond for many films later, like right through the 70s and through the 80s and even up to the Pierce Brosnan era as well.
Well, they do mention it. And it is at the start of... I think Roger Moore's last movie, a big reference to it, and they bring it up in one of the other ones. But with that, let's...
For Your Eyes Only.
Yeah.
If that was right at the beginning, when he lays the flowers at her grave.
Yeah, was it that one? I thought it was the other one.
They also mentioned it in License to Kill, and there's a quick...
License to Kill.
I think in one of Pierce's films, I think GoldenEye or Tomorrow Never Dies, I think. I'm trying to remember.
I don't recall it getting mentioned in GoldenEye, and I would know that.
It's like a very quick kind of like reference. It's like, there, God, it's one of that you probably won't notice at first.
Yeah.
But I sort of read up about it, and it's sort of, it is in Pierce's films. It's in one of them, but I'm not exactly sure which one, though.
Okay, excuse me, my voice for some reason is going. Should we go to Roger Moore, which I'm trying to get out of my mouth?
I'm Roger Moore.
Definitely.
All right. We'll guess we'll go over the same format as we did for Connery. We'll mention our favorite, and we'll just go around again. So my favorite, personally, would be The Spy Who Loved Me, as I just think it's a fantastic film. I think it's probably one of the best films in general. And I actually really like, I think it's an interesting story, and I think you have a really interesting, like Bond girl. And I think it's a really fun and exciting movie. And I just think Roger Moore does a really great job, and you have Barbara Bach, I don't even know if I'm saying that right, as a really, really interesting character, and the way things happen between, like, her and Bond, I think is pretty interesting. And, of course, you have a very memorable henchman with Jaws. And I think that, I mean, he provides a lot of really cool moments in the movie. But I think just overall, it's just a fantastic, fantastic movie. So that would be my absolute favorite of the Roger Moore movies. But after I let you guys talk about your favorites, there's another one that there's a few, actually, I wouldn't mind mentioning if they don't get mentioned before that. So how about for you, Mr. Bosworth? And I believe he's your favorite Bond, if I'm not mistaken.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Roger, I actually grew up on Roger. The Spy Who Loved Me was actually the very first Bond they ever saw. And, you know, a lot of people are like, Roger, you know, wasn't the true Bond or based on the novels or anything like that. But being raised on him, he will always be the number one. Because when I was growing up, whenever I thought of Bond, it was always Roger Moore. So as much as I love Connery, but I'll admit though that over the years, while The Spy Who Loved Me is one of my top ones, one that's been kind of fighting for the top spot with me for Roger is actually Live and Let Die, his very first. Mm. And the reason being is because a buddy of mine, Fraser, we were talking about this recently, and we both agree Live and Let Die was batshit insane. It was a completely different take on the character. It had villains that were nuts. It had, you know, it had just a great story, but, you know, everything was completely different. There were no crazy gadgets. There were a few here and there, but the villain was fantastic. I mean, you had Baron Samedi. You had, it was the first movie to ever have Bond have a relationship with an African-American woman. And it was just, it's just one of my absolute all-time favorites. I mean, Yaphet Otto, who played the actual villain for it, was also fantastic. It was a very smart role, very cool. It also, you know, the movie actually dove into drugs, which was
it did kind of new
at the time. So, but it's a big fight between The Spy Who Loved Me and Live and Let Die. But if someone put a gun to my head, I'd also have to say The Spy Who Loved Me. Great sets, great story, great villains. Like you said, Jaws, the first intro to him. Barbara Bach, stunning as Anya Mosova. And definitely one of my faves.
And EJ.
I just wanted to say that's an interesting choice because there were moments of Live and Let Die that sort of play like a horror film at times. Mm-hmm. And it was basically a direct reflection of blaxploitation films of the 70s that were so popular at the time.
Yeah.
But favorite has always been Octopussy. I think it's a blast from beginning to end. It flies by. It's so much fun. And I love the fact that Bond wears so many different disguises in that movie. It's the great Bond disguise film, in my opinion. And it's just loads of fun. I just love it.
Take that, Bede.
Bede has a different opinion about Octopussy.
Yeah, Bede, what's your opinion of Octopussy?
I think it's the worst Bond movie. And I'm not ashamed to admit that. I think it's an awful movie.
You should be ashamed to admit a Bond movie is awful.
Well, this one really, like, I have to admit that the Roger Moore era Bond films is probably my least favorite era of the series. Only because, the thing is, Octopussy kind of epitomizes all the things that I don't like about that era. Like, it's just too silly and too over the top, and the humor just feels very forced and just kind of stupid. Like, that whole sequence where he's in the jungle and he, like, swings from vine to vine and lets out a Tarzan cry. That's the moment where I was like, no. I was shaking my head in, like, how bad that was.
And I didn't even think it's, like, bad.
The alligator mechanism that he floats in, that's epic.
That's a really, like, good idea. I thought that was kind of interesting. But going back to his Tarzan call, I have no problem with that, except by yelling, he gives away his position, which I think was a really silly move.
Well, maybe it's like it's just one of those things. Like, I have heard that there are actually versions that get rid of the Tarzan crawl. I mean, call. I don't know where that came from. Anyways, but I don't know. It was just too silly for my taste. Like, even though Roger Moore era films had a lot of silly moments in them, but this one just stretched it way too far, and it just wasn't fun for me at all.
It is pretty, it does stretch it quite a bit, but I don't know, I love Roger's era because it was just so much fun. I mean,
exactly. I mean,
the man did 7 films, he still holds the record, and, you know, by the time A View to a Kill came around, you could tell he was just getting way too old. I mean,
I thought
you
watch it too old for this one.
Well, you watch the Blu-ray and you can tell, oh, stunt guy. Oh, there's Roger. Oh, no, there's stunt guy. So it's freaking
Well, he was ready to kind of hang it up, but because 1983 also had Sean Connery in the rival movie, I don't think they wanted to invest in a new Bond at that stage. And I do think Octopussy made more money than Never Say Never Again. So for them, it proves to be a good thing.
And to be honest, I hate the title, Octopussy. It just sounds like a porno that the Octomom would star in. So it's just
it's the only Bond movie that its name is from the Bond girl, who, once again, is actually Maud Adams.
Yeah, it's like the best part of the movie.
Wait.
It's like the best part of the movie.
Nick, say that again.
Sounds like a movie that Sean would be in.
There we go.
Gotta get some of that Octopussy.
But it's actually, it's explained in the movie why she's called Octopussy.
It's got
an octopus head, damn it.
You cannot dislike Octopussy because Homer Simpson said it's one of the only good things the British ever did.
And the guy with the circular saw was, like, awesome. I want to prove that I can kill Bond. I'm going to slice a photo in half. That was awesome.
You know what? Octopussy is a shitload of fun, and it's actually one of the movies that just flies by really quickly.
Sorry?
I said it is one of the only movies, like Bond movies, that actually just really goes really, really fast.
You also gonna love the opening of Octopussy, that little plane and the explosion. That's like one of the best pre-credit sequences. Mm. In the whole era.
And I love the fact that Bond says this line in this movie where they're like, it's an island full of women, no men allowed. And then he says, that's sexual discrimination. Oh, Bond, you and your sexual business.
I will admit that was a funny line.
When with everything that he does and that's discrimination, yeah, I gotta love that.
It's kind of an ironic line when you think about it.
It really is. That's why I love it.
That's the only good part of the movie.
But what would be, you say, your favourite of the Roger Moore movies, even though, as you said, it's not your favourite era in Bond?
Well, actually, I have to admit, I'm going against the grain again, because this one's not really talked about as, you know, as much as The Spy Who Loved Me, even though that's a really good one. Actually, my favourite Roger Moore Bond era film is For Your Eyes Only.
Which is a good movie.
It sort of looked like after Moonraker, since that was so kind of hilariously overdone and just way too over the top.
And I love Moonraker.
This one. Sorry?
I said, and I love Moonraker. I have so much fun with that movie.
You know what's funny, though? Like, I know people consider Moonraker, like, the one of the worst Bond movies, but I actually didn't mind that one. Like, it is very... Like, it's silly as well, but it's not too silly, but I actually kind of... Well, it was one I watched as a kid, so maybe it's because of nostalgia, but I actually didn't mind that one, to be honest.
For 1979, that movie was incredibly well done. I mean, yeah. They took it seriously. They tried to anyway, at least with the space station and all that.
Mm.
Yeah,
but it had one of the best scores. It had great look. That's one thing I'll always give Bond is location. Mm. Holy shit, they pick up.
Yeah.
I think that movie suffered from...
It was really made just to capitalize on, you know, since Star Wars was big at the time and sci-fi was like the thing at the time. So they figured, let's send Bond into space.
Yeah.
Well, that was it. That was the era. Mm. And Michael Lonsdale as Hugo Drax, the villain, is my all-time favorite villain.
I actually think he's one of the more weaker villains. And I think the stuff at the end brings the movie down because it is just really suspending disbelief to an extraordinary point. But, yeah, I really enjoy the movie, but I think we should just sadly let Bede talk about his pick. Yes,
Bede. I'll be honest, I was talking about For Your Eyes Only, and this one was sort of like going back to basics after Moonraker. And I sort of like that, you know, since we already had a couple of Bond films where there was basically Bond had to save the world, what I liked about this one is just it's a good old-fashioned just espionage story. And it was just, it was really entertaining. It had a pretty cool kick-ass opening. It was just a lot of fun, and I actually really liked it. It was well-written, nicely directed, had some pretty cool Bond girls in it, even though... out of all the Roger Moore ones, this was the one I had the most fun with.
Mm-hmm. Nick, you started talking, but then Bede started talking. What was it that you were going to say before the For Your Eyes Only bit?
Who are you talking to?
You.
Oh, sorry. I thought Bede was done. No, I was just gonna say what Bede was saying. I thought it was kind of really slow, and I didn't like the For Eyes Only. It had nice locations, nice script. But to be honest with you, it just felt like a ripoff of From Russia with Love. They were after the Lecter, which they were after decoding machine, and From Russia with Love as well. And I don't know. I didn't like the villain. I thought it was a slow ending. It had a great opening, but I don't know. Just didn't think it was that exciting compared to the rest of them.
And I'll just go to me again. I did want to mention The Man with the Golden Gun, which I think is definitely right up there as a favorite. And the more I think about this movie, the more I end up just really loving it a lot. I do think it is really different for a Bond movie because he's kind of just going up against one man and his island and his golden gun. It's not like an evil organization.
Eddie Fur Dipple Bossy, don't forget.
Yeah, I'm getting to it. The villain, of course, is Francisco Scaramanga, who has a third nipple and is played by Christopher Lee. So that already has an awesome edge, but my other favorite thing about this movie is that his, like, henchman, right-hand man is Tattoo from Fantasy Island, which is really awesome because they're on a freaking island. He's on an island with Scaramanga.
Hey, wait, Mrs. Scaramanga.
Oh my God, that's spot on.
The plane.
Oh God, I can't handle it. But yes, I do like Tattoo. I don't call him by his actual name in this movie.
Yeah, Everybody knows him as Tattoo.
He's Tattoo.
You can call him for those.
I know I confused a lot of people with my live tweets when I kept saying Tattoo, and everyone's like, what's a Tattoo? Who's Tattoo? And I'm like, Fantasy Island, hello. And then half the people understood. So
can I just say, with the Man of the Golden Gun, if there's one thing I really didn't like about that movie is the subplot with the sheriff. Like, he was introduced in he was also introduced in Live and Let Die, and I just found that character very annoying.
Yeah, I did as well. That's probably, like, the only thing I might agree with you on. He might grow on me, you know, with more watches, but I kind of, like, kind of preferred him a bit more in The Man with the Golden Gun. But it's just like, why the fuck is he there?
Exactly. It's like he shows up out of nowhere. It's like, did the producers really need to bring him back? Was he that popular?
Apparently he was, because I think these two probably like him.
Secret agent! That English secret agent from England!
I love that man. He's terrible, but he is entertaining for a few minutes.
Yeah.
Joe Don Baker showing up in the Pierce Brosnan movies is like, why are you here? But at the same time, it's kind of pleasant to see him.
Yeah, before we move along, we haven't mentioned A View to a Kill, which I think for a lot of people ranks really low on their list, but I have a lot of fun this movie.
Walken.
Yeah, I know. It's got Christopher Walken.
Christopher Walken.
And I don't know. I had a lot of silly fun with the movie, and I call me crazy, but I actually really liked Grace Jones in this movie.
Grace Jones scared the shit out of me in this movie.
She scared the shit out of Christopher Walken in bed.
I just felt like she just freaks me out. Like she I couldn't take her seriously as a Bond girl. It just freaked me out. If I was Bond, I'd be like scared shitless.
I don't know. She seems pretty happy to jump into bed with Bond over Christopher Walken.
Christopher Walken.
Walken.
Walk it.
Hello, Mr. Bond.
Hello there, Mr. Bond.
That guy can never die. That man must live forever. I swear to God.
But yeah, am I the only person that actually has a lot of fun with this movie?
I think you're the only one, boss.
Okay. But I don't know, EJ, you've been quiet for a while. Speak up. Defend my honor.
View to a Kill is actually my second favorite of the Roger Moore Bonds. It's actually probably the first Bond I saw, because like Nick, I grew up in the Roger Moore era, so to speak. But I just love the sets in the View to a Kill. You've got the Eiffel Tower, that great chase with like the half car.
And, oh man, Bond's the only one that could drive a half car.
And France is great as well, and all the stuff in San Francisco, since I live in the Bay Area, and stuff at the Golden Gate Bridge, all that kind of stuff. Sort of, I have a fondness for. He does look old in it, but I enjoy the heck out of that movie.
Thank you. High five.
And it has Dolph Lundgren in the movie as well, Marcy. Don't forget.
Dolph Lundgren.
Yeah,
he and was the girl from Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade, Jenny.
She
Quest.
Is in that movie. The Nazi bitch, as I call her.
The Nazi bitch. Right.
But yeah,
you got to remember, Dolph Lundgren was actually dating Grace Jones at the time.
I don't remember him being in it. Like,
he's
at all.
He's like in a very... He's in a very...
He's a KGB henchman.
That's probably why I wasn't paying any attention, because then after that, what did he do? Rocky IV, right?
Yep.
Very minor.
Yeah, it's... all right, well, we'll say goodbye to the precious Roger Moore, and... we'll go along to Timothy Dalton. Generally say Dalton, but whatever.
One of my least favorites, too.
You know what? And it wasn't his fault. It's just the movies. I don't know. Living Daylights is good, but anyway.
I definitely have to disagree. I like Timothy Dalton. I've always been a fan of his work.
I love Timothy Dalton, too, but
I actually really, really like his two movies. I do think they're underrated.
I think Living Daylights is underrated. I think License to Kill is crap.
I prefer License to Kill over the Living Daylights.
I felt like they were trying to take Miami, like Miami Vice was extremely popular at the time. It's like, ooh, Miami Vice is popular.
Oh, I'm not going to argue with that point at all.
I thought it was a terrible villain. I don't know. I love Timothy. I think Timothy was actually a great Bond. It was just, did you have to have Wayne Newton in it? You know, I don't know. It's just Living Daylight's great. I loved it. It also was the one that came out of the year I was born. Yay! So, but yeah, I don't know. The Dalton years I can't really get on too much. I mean, he only got two, so.
I really love License to Kill, and I really like The Living Daylights. I mean, it's got John Rhys-Davies in it, of course, who's awesome.
One of the highlights of that movie.
But I actually think the direction they went in was interesting. But, yeah, I mean, License to Kill, I don't know what it is about this movie that I fucking really, I have to swear, sorry, that I really love about it. It could be the fact that, A, you have Robert Darby as the villain, who, of course, is in Showgirls, which is awesome. You have his main henchman is Benicio del Toro.
Very young Benicio.
He was 21. I think that makes him, like, the youngest Bond villain, apparently.
Sam Flippy. Yep. Flippy for real.
Flippy for real. And I think it's interesting that they kind of went with the story that has Bond kind of, you know, as a rogue. It's definitely more graphically violent. But that whole ending, I mean, that is epic. I love it. I love that action. I had a fucking good time with this movie. And, you know, I think Dalton probably had another couple of movies in him if they didn't have the troubles that they had with getting another movie made. I think he could have been, you know, he could have had a really good run. And I do like his Bond. I think it was a very different... and I think he was, you know, at this point, really changing with the times.
And that's exactly it, Marcy. And what he started, Daniel Craig perfected. That kind of, you know, tough edge, you know, kind of off the reservation kind of Bond. I like that. Whereas, you know, with Roger, it was all by, you know, Queen and Country. Whereas with Timothy, it was like, I got a score to sell.
Yeah.
And Marcy, can I just say that I have to agree with you. Dalton, for me, is one of my favourite Bonds because I find both those films underrated. And License to Kill is actually one of my favourite.
Yeah, how the fuck are we agreeing on this?
Yeah, well, one of the things I like about it is that License to Kill is basically a revenge film, and revenge films I always have a good time with. Like, he does go rogue, but I just find that it was just a lot of fun, and I sort of like the sort of the darker elements of the story, like especially coming off like the Moore films, which were a bit more lighthearted and fun. I sort of like the more
really took serious, it to a different place.
And I do agree with Nick that these two films were the precursor to Daniel Craig's take on the character, because this, and at the time you got to remember both these films were not really that liked by Bond fans or critics because they didn't like the sort of the darker elements. But I'm a huge fan, and I really like License to Kill. I think it's a really good and compelling film. The only thing I did like about it, and I know you'll disagree with me on this, Marcy, I actually did like Keri Lau as the Bond girl, because I felt...
Yeah, I wasn't a fan.
I actually really liked her. I thought she was gorgeous, and also she was one of the few Bond girls who actually could handle her own, so she didn't have to be saved all the time, and she actually stood up for herself.
I didn't think she was a very good actress, which doesn't necessarily have to, you know, be an important thing, but I didn't think she gelled with Dalton. I didn't buy her in the character, but that's just me personally.
Well, I kind of like that. I thought she was good in the film, and she's actually one of my favourite Bond girls, but we can go a bit more further.
Well, we'll talk about that a bit later, but, and... EJ, what about you? Because you've not really said much.
I'm not really a fan of either of Dalton's Bonds. I do like him as a Bond. Like Nick said, he sort of took it in the direction of the books, and Daniel Craig sort of perfected it. But License to Kill, for me, basically killed the franchise for 6-7 years, whatever it was. And I just find the film ugly. I think it's a little too violent and a little too gruesome for Bond. But I do love the ending, the action sequence with the trucks down the mountainside. That's a great action sequence. I know, they're two of my least favorite Bonds overall.
They're some of my favorites. But speaking of favorite, we're going to go to Pierce Brosnan, and I'm getting really giddy because my favorite Bond movie ever happens to be a Pierce Brosnan movie, and no, it is not Die Another Day.
No, it's not. Seriously, what's your favorite?
GoldenEye.
If anybody does not say GoldenEye, then I don't know what you're talking about.
GoldenEye.
That's by far.
GoldenEye.
I've never seen his luck, James.
GoldenEye is my absolutely all-time favorite Bond movie.
Absolutely.
And
you know what? That's grown over the years. I remember people who hated it, but now think it's like the greatest.
It is. It's a movie that definitely, like, you know, when it, when it came out, but, a little bit after, it was one that really got me back into wanting to watch Bond again. This movie, I'm just going to say, this movie for me is perfection. I love everything about this movie. I love Pierce Brosnan's Bond. He was definitely somebody that was just meant to be this character.
He was the perfect mix of all the previous Bonds. Yeah.
He was meant to be
Bond back in the 80s.
He was, yeah. But thanks to Remington Steele and all the contractual issues, he had to wait. Yeah.
They wouldn't let him go.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, this movie, it's epic. It's so much fun. I think it just gets everything right. And what I love so much about this movie is that, you know, it has an amazing beginning. You know, yeah. It kind of tells you, you know, Bond is back, rah, rah, rah. And then you've also, you know, it's straight off the bat, it introduces you to another 00 agent, which is something we're not terribly familiar with. And he, of course, is in the shape of Sean Bean, who plays Alec Trevelyan. And straight off, you see him get killed. And for me, I'm like, yeah, okay, I don't think he's actually dead. And then his return and his motivation. I mean, my first time watch, that surprised the hell out of me. And I thought it was awesome. Like,
for England, dude?
For England.
No.
I think what makes him such a great villain is everything is there. He's got this motivation, this personal attachment to Bond. It's just great. And then, you know, you've got a lot of things that, like, slowly unfold in the movie when you find out, like, their plans. And, you know, you also have, as Bede would call her, Funky Jansen.
Indeed, she's funky.
She plays, I think, one of the best, like, women villain-ish characters. And she
has the best name ever, Xenia on a top.
She's on a top of things.
She can lock it in her thighs any day.
Yeah, she has.
Yeah. Her middle name is Vergina.
Yep.
And yes, Vergina on the top.
Thank you. On the top. And on yes. Top.
Your accent, Georgian?
Very good, Mr. Bond.
Thank you. Awesome. She does have the best way of killing men.
Yes, she does.
And I love all the little bits in this movie. I love Alan Cumming and his bodice, who's invincible.
I am invincible.
You know,
you sit on it, but you can't take it with you.
Yeah, this movie's perfect. I love it. I want to watch it right now. And I need to take a cold shower after I watch it because it is just one of the hottest Bond movies ever. I don't think it got matched with just that whole thing between the two guys until Skyfall, which we will talk about when we get to that era, which is the next one. But, oh, my God.
And you know what's interesting?
My lady parts just want to explode when I watch this movie.
And the next one, Joe Don Baker's in GoldenEye, but he was also in The Living Daylights, but he played a completely different character in that one. I always just found it interesting that they brought him back to star in this one, but in
to be a villain. A good,
yeah, well, yeah, yeah,
in good guy, from a villain to a good guy, yeah, from Living Daylights.
I always thought that was interesting. So,
Yeah. Is this everyone's favorite Pierce Brosnan?
Oh, it's definitely up there. As
No. It's actually not my favorite.
Disowned out. No, I'm just kidding.
I'll be honest with you. Over the years, I don't believe me. I think GoldenEye is absolutely... It's in my top five all time. But I'll be honest with you. There are a few. There's a lot of things about GoldenEye that bug the shit out of me. And number one, I think it actually has one of the worst soundtracks of all the Bonds. I think... what's his name? Eric Serra, who is a favorite of Luc Besson, who did Leon and all them. The porno music during the Aston Martin car chase. That bing, bow, 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 it's one of the most retarded things I've ever
That's
heard.
That's what
in my
I
life.
Play every time I drive a car.
Oh.
Because I so drive cars.
That's all I think. I hear you. I don't know. There's so many things. The story makes almost no sense. I mean, the fact is they want to steal the golden eye, and then they want to steal all the money and then wipe out London, you know, showing no financial record. Okay, if there's no record, then there's no money. It's just there's all these, you know, little things. And then how did Trevelyan, Sean Bean's character, not die in that explosion? How would he have known that he was setting for, you know, 3 minutes instead of six? And it just, there was so much of it that just didn't make sense. He jumped off a canyon just to end up at the top of a mountain. You know, I know that's nitpicking and all that, but there's just a lot of things about it. And I love Isabella Scorupco as an actress. She played the Bond girl, Natalia Semyonova, but I thought she was actually one of the worst Bond girls. She bitched and screamed and yelled and it just too much. I don't know. It's just really bugging me sometimes, but I don't know. I still absolutely love the movie, but for me, my favorite is Tomorrow Never Dies. Ooh. And I love it for the fact that it had a Bond girl that kicked a lot of ass. Michelle Yeoh is fantastic. I love the story and the story of the manipulation of the media, which is so relevant today. Even more relevant than
it
was back then.
What I think about that is, I think that's definitely relevant. I just thought the character was just pretty weak, and Jonathan Pryce just hammed the fuck out of that role.
I love it. His opening, when he's, you know, it's just focused on his glasses, and he's writing his headlines and things, I fucking love it.
I really like this movie. I mean, that would be my, like, the next favorite with Brosnan, so...
I think it had the best action. I think it had the best, some of the best music. I think it had some of the best settings. I thought Price was awesome. Hey. There was one little bit where he does this little kung fu mocking.
That was so awful.
That was where it catapulted. But everything before that was fucking gold. And I mean, the car chase in the parking lot is flat out one of the greatest Bond action scenes of all time. I think Pierce was really in his element. I think he was a much darker and, you know, much a deadly killing machine, but with that, you know, that special charm. And he had that in GoldenEye as well, but here it was really, really sunk in. And I don't know, for me over the years, Tomorrow Never Dies has really sunk in better than GoldenEye, despite loving.
It's a better movie than people give it credit for.
I really think it is, and I think it was very well done and just, overall, I just think it edges GoldenEye by just a bit.
And I will add in that I think Michelle Yeoh is definitely one of the best women.
She is.
That have been in it, because she's kind of like his equal, although I'm not like entirely sure I buy the ending romance, really.
I kind of liked it. I thought it was...
But I liked that she was kind of like on that level and she can just kick anybody's ass, really.
Exactly.
And Michelle Yeoh is just awesome all around. So
she is.
I'm a big fan of Michelle Yeoh.
Meow.
What did
you call her?
I said Michelle Yeoh.
You said Michelle Meow.
Meow. Meow. Meow. Anyways, she kicked a lot of ass, and I did enjoy them. It's a lot of fun. Tomorrow Never Dies. And I do agree with Nick. It's like the story is still very relevant today.
Very cool. I just thought it was really ahead of its time, and decide, you know, how media manipulation with politics is so well done. I just love the way they played it out.
And it's funny how Jonathan Pryce's look in the movie is based on I'm trying to figure out his name. He's Australian, but I can't think of his name.
Rupert Murdoch.
He's sort of that.
Was it Murdoch? Oh yeah, it was. That's right. I was going to say, he actually looks more like Steve Jobs when you're if you just his hair a little bit.
Yeah, maybe a combination of both. But I don't...
Okay, EJ, who's been silent again, I think he I think someone's a bit scared to speak up against the crazy, but give us your
Tomorrow Never Dies is one of my least favorite Bonds, and I can't take Jonathan Pryce as the villain seriously, especially when he does that kung fu bit. I cringe every time he does it.
It's terrible.
You know, I like Michelle Yeoh. I just don't think she was really a great Bond girl, and it's kind of a problem I have with all the Brosnan Bonds. I don't think he's really had a truly great and memorable Bond girl.
Oh, come on, Terry Hatcher. Come on, she was perfect Bond.
She was killed off pretty early, though.
But that's Marner. A Bond girl. That's what they do. They betray the villain, and then they get killed, and it's beautiful.
No. They betray the villain, bonk Bond, then get killed.
Yes, exactly. That was when Terry Hatcher, was a goddess.
I do like the car chase in the garage, though. That's a good scene.
Hell yeah.
What about The World Is Not Enough? I like this movie. What ruins it for me is Denise Richards, who's fucking terrible.
Yep, I thought Christmas only comes once a year, Marcy.
Christmas can get shoved up someone's ass and never come back.
The World Is Not Enough has one of the best opening sequences of all time. After the opening sequence,
it's good.
Turns to crap.
Mm. The opening is actually really good, and I think there's a lot of really interesting things, but she just ruins it so bad.
Jones, Christmas Jones, I'm somehow a fucking nuclear physicist.
You can't even say it, like, without wanting to just...
Well, Wild Things wasn't even that long before it, and that's actually one of the reasons Pierce Brosnan chose her. Can you?
Yeah, I wonder why he chose her.
And I'm like, you have got to be fucking kidding me. The only saving grace to that movie was Robert Carlyle and
Sophie
Marceau.
Yeah, I thought they were both actually really good, interesting kind of villains and stuff like that. But didn't
get enough of them. That was the...
Yeah. I don't think it's that great. I think there's a lot of interesting ideas, but yeah, one bad casting decision really
destroyed
it. It
was like the biggest waste of the car. That was another thing that drove me crazy. The car did one thing and then they sawed it in half and I'm like, seriously? Like, are you fucking kidding me? I don't know. There's a lot of things wrong with it.
Yeah, and then we have Die Another Day, which this kind of really did kill the franchise for a while.
It was way too over the top.
It was too over the top. I know they wanted... It was, you know, the 40 years of Bond. I know they wanted to pay homage. I think a lot of those just didn't work at all.
They did it right with Skyfall.
Yes, definitely.
They didn't throw it in your face. They made it subtle.
Yeah. For me personally, this is just how I feel. I don't think Die Another Day makes much freaking sense at all.
No, it doesn't.
Some of the action is okay. Halle Berry is awful.
Halle Berry doesn't make sense.
That is just... Yeah.
The only thing she had going for her is that she was hot. That's it. She was fucking terrible. She couldn't shoot a gun. She couldn't act. But to be honest with you, the movie is one gigantic pun. It's pun after pun after pun, whether it's about ice or about sex or about bullshit. It's fucking
There's a lot of
one
it.
Of the worst scripts ever.
It kind of works for me just on... I just don't need to have my brain functioning at all. I can sit, watch it, and laugh.
It's so bad, it's good. Yeah, it's the Room. It's not that territory.
There's a lot of silly things, but I mean, I kind of like, you know, Rosamund Pike, who's just a goddess.
She is. She looks so bored in the movie. You gotta admit.
I know we're gonna talk about themes in a little bit, but yeah, the worst theme, hands down. I love Madonna, but yeah, no.
No. Everything. It was all terrible. Just, the story was ridiculous. The villain was so cheesy. It was just, I don't know. But I don't know maybe if they were aiming for that. I mean, the ice field car chase, that was pretty awesome.
But I like the fencing match, sword fight. I think that's a great scene.
You know what? I tried to like it, but all I'm thinking is, wow, people are really accepting of this situation. I'm like, are you serious?
Yeah, I wasn't a big fan of it.
Nothing happened. And I'm like, oh, what? You know what? As soon as the movie goes to Cuba, that's where it goes downhill. Everything, the opening was great, like when he's in Korea and whatnot. But after that, it just catapults for me.
It is the Batman and Robin of the franchise.
Oh, so. By far. And I feel sorry for Pierce that was the last movie that he was a part of. I think he deserved a much better send-off.
He did.
And it's funny, though, how like Pierce's films sort of went down in quality as they went on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It almost started doing what Rogers films did. They were starting to go over the top. You know, it started from a very believable type Bond, and then it's like, oh, we gotta keep the audience, you know, happy. And it's like, well, let's just throw more bullshit at them. It's like, no. The car doesn't need to be invisible, you know.
I didn't like the invisible car. I just thought that was so ridiculous.
It was retarded. The effect was stupid.
I wasn't a fan.
One of my favorite lines in the movie is when whatever that guy from Fast and the Furious, the bald guy, Diamond Face, he was looking down on Hallie when she's strapped to the chair or whatever, and he's like, "I'll let you in on a little secret. This mine is fake, but the lasers are real." I'm like, why the fuck would you put real lasers in a fake mine? I'm like, this fucking movie is stupid. It's laughable.
Yeah.
The Ice Palace was pretty ridiculous. I expected Arnold Schwarzenegger from Batman and Robin to show up and do ice puns. Nice to see you, Mr. Bond.
Chill.
Yeah, I'm surprised Mr. Freeze wasn't the Bond villain for Die Another Day.
You know what?
He should have.
Because that little tropical area could have been Poison Ivy's hideout.
Bom, bom, bom.
That would have worked.
Is that all we have to say on Pierce Brosnan? Does anyone have anything they actually want to add to this?
Nah, he was a great Bond. You know, he just didn't get the send-off he deserved, and his first two movies are two of the best, in my opinion.
Well, he's one of my favorites.
He was a great Bond.
Yeah, I agree.
EJ?
I agree. He's top three behind Connery and Moore, as far as I'm concerned.
Okay, let's get to our most recent Bonds.
Craig.
Daniel Craig. And I will say that he has two brilliant movies and one okay-ish
movie.
I like Quantum of Solace. It's kind of more even like a guilty pleasure, even because I just think that it's not a Bond movie at all.
Yeah, no. it's a Bourne movie. That's
neither is Casino Royale if you really look at it.
Oh, Casino Royale is perfection as far as I'm concerned. Where Quantum is, Quantum was a great sequel, but a terrible Bond film.
I think it's a good movie. It's just not a Bond movie for Quantum.
Yeah.
I know what they're trying to set up. Like, I think they're trying, excuse me, with Quantum, I think they're trying to set up, like, a new Spectre.
Which is fine.
And it really is sort of a bridging movie because you could see that they were planning to have a really big next film, but they didn't actually go in that direction. They went with something different with Skyfall, which I do think was a good idea because Skyfall was awesome.
Weakville as well.
Look, I still would probably put Casino Royale in like my top five.
Top three.
it surprises me that this was the first Bond movie based on the first book. And I know that there was the spoof movie, which isn't exactly a Bond movie, and there was some kind of I don't know, TV hour or something where they used Casino Royale. But, yeah, I was really surprised that it had never been made into a movie till 2006. And I think it's fantastic. I do think it's a great kind of reboot of sorts of the series, giving us something so different. And I love the way this movie opens. I think it's really just really different, and it was just a cool beginning. And then it gets straight into the action with this movie. We're kind of introduced to Le Chief, played by the wonderful Mads Mikkelsen. And, you know, it's kind of quite action-packed at the start. It kind of takes a bit of a breather. And then we go to, you know, we get to our story. We meet, like, Vespa, who's, I think, one of the best Bond girls with Eva Green. Because, you know, she actually had some kind of a story and a great, I think, connection with Bond. And I love all the poker stuff. I think that stuff is great. I love watching it. When this came out, I was big on watching poker on TV. I never played it. I watched the shit out of it on TV. So for me, it was awesome. And there's so many, like, amazing moments that they pulled off, like Bond getting poisoned and he goes to his car to try and save himself, and he's just a little bit too late until Vespa actually shows up. There's really interesting, like, supporting cast, like Jeffrey Wright and
the best Felix ever.
Giancarlo Giannini, who I went blank on his name. And I love that they kept, like, Judi Dench as M as well. And it definitely, towards the end, it takes such an interesting turn. And I know that the whole spirit of what they were doing was very true to the book. I have read the book. It's been a very long time. But that's my personal feelings on Casino Royale.
Mm-hmm.
Bosley?
Yeah, and I'm in total agreement with you, just in terms of which one is my favorite. And, I mean, believe me, I think Skyfall is perfection as well. I thought it was fantastic. But there's one thing about Casino Royale that tops all of them. And it's actually the reason that Casino Royale is my favorite Bond film of all time. And not only does it have – Daniel Craig is a fantastic Bond. He's the closest to the perfect representation of Ian Fleming's Bond that could ever be. But the action is perfect. The story is perfect. I just love everything about it. But the one thing that elevates it the most is what Marcy already mentioned, is Eva Green as Vesper Lynd, who is not only the best Bond girl of all time, but – their relationship just elevated Bond to a whole new level. Just, and her death was one of the saddest. And, you know, it took me back to Honor Majesty's Secret Service again, where she wasn't a toss away. He fell in love with her. She was in love with him, and she betrayed him and she killed herself for it. Mm. It was just so incredible. Such a wonderful fucking story. It has an amazing opening. A brilliant ending. I love the way it finished and led into the next ones. I love the fact that he didn't say his name till the very end. It was just also has one of the best soundtracks of the series. Just overall, as perfect as Skyfall is, I still think Casino Royale is superior.
And EJ?
I have to disagree, at least when it comes to Skyfall, but at the time when Casino Royale came out, I just, as a Bond fan, I just didn't feel like it was a proper Bond film at the time. I've grown to like the film a lot since then, but at the time I was like, where's my Money Penny moment? Where's my Q moment? And these are moments from the franchise that I've always loved. And like the last scene, like Nick just said, when he finally says his name, that was the one true moment where I felt it was a proper Bond film, a But up until then,
you had to expect it. Yeah, yeah. Like it was the origin.
I think the poker scene goes on too long. They only show you like five different hands. As somebody who played poker for money back in the day, and I'm not really totally sold on the villain. Lashif doesn't really do it for me, but I do like the film, and Ava Green is great. I just wasn't thrilled with the way the franchise went when Daniel Craig started, but I've grown to like it a lot more since then.
Uh-huh.
And Bede.
Casino Royale is a completely utter awesome sauce to me. I loved it. It's one of my favorite Bond films. It's just, it's almost perfect. It's the almost perfect Bond film for me. And we have to mention that Martin Campbell, who directed GoldenEye, came back to direct this one. So he basically successfully regenerated Bond twice. So that's saying it's a lot.
That's funny when you mention that. If he anything he touches other than Bond seems to turn to shit.
Except for the Mask of Zorro.
Except for exactly. That is the only exception. Everything else, I don't mind Vertical Limit. I actually think it's kind of fun.
That's a fun movie, to be honest.
It's a fun movie. But everything else he just gets slapped for. But when he touches Bond, it's like a master working art.
Hey, you know what was good that he did that I saw recently because we did the blogathon? Was the TV movie Cast a Deadly Spell.
Yeah.
And I was very surprised that he actually did that. I was like, oh, shit, okay.
I know. It's surprising when you watch Green Lantern because the story, maybe it's the writing. I don't know what it is.
And that movie had way too much in it, and I just don't think he felt very invested with how it went. But
yeah,
that's
my take. It found that mix that Thor didn't, but anyway, yeah, it's funny that he mentions that if he's just perfection. It's almost like you want him to come back and do another Bond.
Yeah.
But
who knows, maybe if they have to redo the franchise again with a different Bond, they should give him a call.
Which they will.
Yeah.
Great. Well, let's talk about Skyfall, seeing as it is the new one. And it's finally came out in Australia last week. And put it in simple terms, I love the shit out of this movie. It was fucking awesome. It was everything I wanted it to be and more.
Yep.
I just loved it so much. I just thought everything about it was great. It really just, you know, Quantum just was not a Bond movie. Skyfall was a fucking Bond movie, and it introduced a lot of classic Bond stuff that just made me so giddy with excitement. And one of those things was, you know, they actually brought back Q, and they gave Q a bit of a different role. And again, it's updated for how things work today, and I thought it was perfect. I liked how the movie was very much, you know, I've said this before, it harks back to, like, GoldenEye, where there's very much a revenge element to it, and you know, the villain is somebody who was, obviously, spoiler alert, he was in the agency, and I think he was a phenomenal villain. I loved Javier, I loved everything that he brought to the character, I loved the way they wrote the character, and I really loved that they, you know, brought the character of M to the front, and Judi Dench just owned the role so much. I mean, essentially, she was kind of like the Bond woman for the movie. The movie's amazing. It has a great soundtrack. I think it has one of the most epic themes, which we'll talk more about themes shortly, but I loved it so much.
Yeah, I'm in the same boat. I thought it was... was it worth the four-year wait? Damn straight it was. It was... absolutely fantastic. It made me completely forgive everything that happened with Quantum, and it was the perfect send-off for another 50 years. Daniel Craig, absolutely fantastic. Came back guns blazing. I thought the story was fantastic, and the true strength of the film was the fact that it was really where, you know, what EJ was saying about Casino Royale, it didn't fully reach its original Bond roots, but in Skyfall, it finally did. For I'm not going to give any spoilers, but I will say that the last 5 minutes for any massive Bond fan like me was like almost better than sex. Like the last 5 minutes was just fucking incredible. I was jumping out of my seat. I couldn't believe what was happening. But anyway, I think Javier Bardem played a very unique and fantastic Bond villain. I love the fact that, again, I don't want to go into spoilers, but his character is, you actually, it gets to the point at the end where you feel sorry for Bardem's character. And that's very strange when it comes to Bond villains, because usually it's all, ooh, diabolical this, diabolical that. But to be honest with you, you feel sorry and you actually understand why he's out to do what he wants to do. Because the horrific things that happened with him, but again, I won't spoil it. But I love the opening, Chase in Turkey. The train sequence was fucking fantastic. As Marcy said, the opening theme was the best since, you know what? I think it's the best theme since GoldenEye, funny enough. Yeah, just the action was great. The cinematography, I think.
Oh my God, how did I not mention that? That needs to win an Oscar. Roger Deakins is like.
Roger Deakins must win. 9 nominations is enough. He, I can't believe he didn't win for No Country for Old Men.
He should have won for Assassination of Jesse James, damn it. That movie is the best looking movie of several years. Upon its release.
Well, he's going to be nominated for Skyfall. Of that, I have no doubt. I'd be very happy if he won. He's got some competition this year. But, I love Naomi Harris, a goddess. Just, I actually think she's hotter than the other girl, Berenice. She did a great job.
I actually agree with you there.
What's that?
I agree with you. I think Naomi Harris was... Just, I think she's absolutely stunning.
She was, I don't know, probably the weakest part of Skyfall.
Hey,
you know what? Berenice, she was there to fulfill the typical Bond girl thing, you know, give information, blah blah blah. But I won't say what happens. But I mean, I thought she did good for her first English speaking role. I thought she actually did good with the time she had. But again, Judi Dench was terrific, and. The action in London was great. It was great to see Bond kicking ass in the Capitol, and I just absolutely loved every bit of it. Can't wait to see it again.
EJ, you can go.
I have to agree. I thought Skyfall was just fantastic. It's probably one of my favorite films of the year, not just one of my favorite Bond films now. Judi Dench's performance is Oscar worthy, in my opinion. She was that good. Like Marcy said, she is the Bond girl of Skyfall. There's no other way to say it. And you can't talk about this film without talking about spoilers. I mean, the opening is fantastic. Those scenes in Turkey. And it was such a emotional roller coaster. It was sort of the first time I felt that emotionally connected to a Bond film throughout the movie. At the opening, it was sort of sad and tragic. Then there's all these great wow moments and moments that made you smile, like at the end, like Nick said. And like the last half hour is just stunning. And the cinematography, amazing. It was a stunning film. I absolutely loved it. It finally felt like a true Bond film. It was finally what I'd been waiting for with the whole Daniel Craig era.
Agreed. Definitely Skyfall is a pretty awesome film. It's definitely one of my faves. And we should mention that what makes Skyfall interesting as a Bond film is that it's the first one to be directed by an Oscar-winning director, with Sam Mendes, who I think does a really great job with this film.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of great moments in it. I think the acting across the board is all really good. And I love all the little tiny nods to the previous Bond films, at one point Q talks about exploding pens, which I was a bit giddy about.
Yeah.
Which I thought was a rather funny reference. And it's just a lot of fun. It has a very compelling story. It's very, it has some really interesting themes as well. And also Javier Bardem is a very empathetic villain. You can understand why he's doing what he's doing. And I liked how Bardem, like, he could have easily played this the same kind of way as he did as Anton Chigurh in No Country for Old Men, but he sort of changes up a little bit. Like, it's a little bit more over the top, but not too much where it, like, takes you out of the movie. It's actually the perfect tone for the character. And there's a bit of a creepiness to him as well, especially in one particular scene, if you guys know what I'm talking about, which I found a bit creepy.
Where he's putting his hands all over Bond.
Yeah, well, that was creepy, but I was talking about the scene where
when he takes out his jaw?
Yeah, that was like real. I was like, spoilers. How that was. Spoilers. That's what I found really good, and I thought the ending was pretty well done. I know there are actually some people who didn't think much of the big final action piece in the film, but I actually thought it was really well done, and it's sort of like it's very different for a Bond film because it's not huge scale. It's kind of very much smaller, and it was just personal. Yeah, and it was in one location.
And
there's some really interesting themes in it as well. I like how the movie kind of has this aspect of it. This is how what happens to Bond at the beginning of it kind of sort of mirrors what happens to Silver's character in the film. And I don't want to go into spoilers about that, but when you sort of think about it and how M dealt with what happens to both those characters, I found rather interesting. Like the whole sort of think of your sins type aspect of the film. Yeah, and I just think it's a really good film. You can definitely watch it and see, because Sam Mendes definitely has gone on record as saying that The Dark Knight was a bit of an influence on this film, and you can sense that while watching it.
Yeah, you can tell.
Yeah, and even, like, sort of some scenes are kind of, I wouldn't say rip-off, but you can definitely say homages. That's some key scenes from the film. But overall, it's a great film, and I definitely can't wait to see it again.
Indeed.
And it makes me excited to where the series is going to go now.
Yeah, same.
Well, to wrap it up, as we promised, we can sort of name off some of our favorite themes. And I'll say I think Skyfall is one of the best ones. I don't want to hear one bad thing about Adele and the song. I know that, you know, that people are going to dislike it, but I respect opinions. I just don't want to hear it. I don't at all. I just, it's amazing. And I guess, I don't know, some of my favorite themes have been, you know, like Live and Let Die, which I think is a phenomenal song. And we brought up before Thunderball from Tom Jones. I think that's just a freaking amazing tune. And I really like the themes for The Living Daylights and License to Kill. What about you guys, Nick?
For me, my all-time favorite theme will always be Nobody Does It Better. I'm telling you, that song just resonates through my childhood. And I had to put it in my tribute, and I just thought, I think it is the quintessential Bond theme because it is absolutely true. To this day, there is no greater action star. There is no greater. He is James Bond, like Indiana Jones and all them. They would not be without James Bond. I also love Goldfinger, Shirley Bassey, one of my all-time favorites, From Russia With Love by Matt Monro. And of course, from the Brosnan days, GoldenEye was just fucking epic. That song was made for Tina Turner. I remember I listened to the original, which was supposed to be sung by Bono. He wrote it, but he was supposed to sing it, and it sucked. It was meant for Tina.
Yeah.
And of course, Adele's new Skyfall theme is just. I'll be honest with you, I thought about it, and like, literally, I think it is the best theme since GoldenEye. I think every theme between GoldenEye and Skyfall has just been meh. Like, I mean, I do like The World Is Not Enough. I think Garbage did a good job, but other than that, it's like, meh, they're okay. But for exceptional songs, I absolutely have to go with my list. Also, Live and Let Die, like you said. You know what? They're all great in their own way, except for that gap I mentioned. But, yeah, a lot of very fun themes, a lot of great and talented singers.
EJ, what about yours?
Well, Nick already named some of the best. Goldfinger, I love. I've always been partial to A View to a Kill by Duran Duran. Love the 80s theme. All Time High from Octopussy, I think, is very underrated.
It's a great one.
And I really like Lulu's The Man with the Golden Gun. I think that's an underrated one as well.
That's a fun theme, yeah.
And I really do like The World Is Not Enough because I'm a big Garbage fan.
Actually, I do really like them. And now to Bede and his views on the songs.
Alrighty, I have to agree with EJ. My favorite Bond theme of all time is View to a Kill by Duran Duran, which is one I sing all the time, which is awesome. and, of course, some of my favorites, like Goldfinger, of course, and GoldenEye. I also, Nobody Does It Better is a good one. But other ones I do really like. I like Diamonds Are Forever by Shirley Bassey. I think that's a classic in its own right. And I also like, I know not many people like this one as much, but I do like Tomorrow Never Dies by by Sheryl Crow. Like, that one's it's sort of a grower, that one. I think if you sort of give that a listen a few times, I think people would appreciate it a bit more.
And it's also good, but there's another. Do you know the one from Katie Lang? You know the alternate?
Yeah, yeah.
Tomorrow Never Dies? Which one do you think is better?
I haven't had a chance to listen to that one, so I can't really say.
I think the Katie Lang version is better, to be honest.
I'd have to give that one a bit of a listen. And also, I do like License to Kill by Gladys Knight as well. I thought that was a good one. And I also love You Know My Name by Chris Cornell. That was like the perfect sort of kick-ass Bond theme to restart the franchise with. And it's a pretty awesome song. And that's about it.
Yep. And what was the other thing we were going to mention before wrapping up?
Bond
I think
Girls.
It was the Bond Girls. Yeah, I don't know. I think there's been a lot of good ones. There's been not so good ones, which we've already mentioned. Let me see. I do really like Pussy Galore, if only because that name's awesome, but I think she's actually a very awesome character.
Blackman played that beautifully.
Yeah, and, you know, from The Spy Who Loved Me. I'm forgetting names, like, so bad. But you know who I mean.
Thanks.
Yes. my brain just is fried. I actually think, you know, Dr. Holly Goodhead in Moonraker, I think she's actually a really good character because she's not someone who sits idly by. She actually, you know, throws punches and does stuff. I'm like forgetting so many because it's just hard to remember everyone. As we mentioned, I like Michelle Yeoh. You know, I think just some really lovely ladies that have shown up have been like Talisa Sato from Mortal Kombat. From License to Kill, I think she's just a very lovely looking lady. Actually, License to Kill had like Shang Tsung in it as well, and I think it was Balrog from Street Fighter. But anyway, obviously we mentioned Vespa. I think she's definitely one of the best ones. They're what's sticking out at me like at this very second. I know I'm forgetting so many. You know, Honey Rider from Dr. No, of course, being, I think, one of the best. I'm just a, you know, a woman that had, I think, one of the best introductions out of the Bond women that I don't really think worked when they tried to do it in Die Another Day. I think Daniel Craig paid homage to that a bit better. I don't know, Nick, what about you?
Yes. A lot of some more foreign ladies I've snubbed.
But Ursula Andress is definitely Doctor No. I mean, Christ, she is the quintessential. She was the first, and she'll always be the best. But Vesper, Eva Green, goddess, amazing actress. I thought she was flat out one of the greatest ever. Jane Seymour as Solitaire in Live and Let Die. I thought she was an excellent Bond girl as well. Michelle Yeoh, of course. Who else? That would be, obviously Spider Love Me and with Agent Triple X. And yeah, there's been so many classics, and it depends on your what you like about Bond girls. Mm. Do you like the ones who are independent and, you know, aren't just damsels in distress, or do you like the ones, who actually kick some ass? And that's why I like Naomi Harris and all the rest. But I'll tell you what, the hardest pick is picking which one was the hottest. I mean, 50 years of even women from, Ursula back then, even now I think, wow, she's hot. It's hard to pick, but quite a legacy.
EJ?
Well, Nick mentioned all the great ones, but I'll add in from the early years, Daniela Bianchi from Russia with Love, and Fiona Volpe from Thunderball. Even though she's a bad guy, I think she's stunning in that film. And really the first Bond girl that Bond was unable to sort of turn. Those are two of my favorites, along with the ones he mentioned already.
Bade?
Yes. Alrighty. Definitely Vesper Lynn is my favorite Bond girl of all time. Eva Green is just absolutely beautiful and gorgeous. And other ones that I really... Like I said, I do like Kerry Lowell in License to Kill. I thought she was really good. Also, Funky Jansen from GoldenEye, or Funky Funker Jansen. She was and Michelle Yeoh from Tomorrow Never Dies. I thought she would made a kick-ass Bond girl. Of course, Naomi Harris, who's going to be a new favorite of mine. And who else? And I agree with Nick. Jane Seymour in Live and Let Die. She was another really good one I like.
Yeah, very, very young, very beautiful.
Indeed. Those are sort of like the main ones, really. Like, there's a lot of gorgeous ones, but I can't pick of them off the top of my head.
It's always difficult, like, with so many things, and it's hard to remember, like, everything.
Yeah.
And, I guess we'll wrap it up with, I don't know, we kind of discussed, like, the villains as we went along, and I don't know, I guess for the record, I guess, like, one of my favorites, as we mentioned earlier, would be, like, Robert Shaw, because I just think he was phenomenal in that role. I think Bond villains are always generally very memorable.
They are. There's been so many of them, and, you know, that was one of my worst worries every time a new Bond film comes out, is how is this villain going to be different? And they, except for Quantum, I thought he was a pretty boring, typical Bond villain. But, like, Michael Lonsdale's my favorite. Robert Shaw is fantastic. I mean, right to Javier Bardem, he was amazing. Then you have the even more personal one, is Sean Bean.
Not Sean Bean, duh.
Usually my feeling is, as good as the Bond villain is, that's how good the film will be. Good Bond villains make for good Bond films.
Yeah.
Before we wrap up, Mark, can I just give, like, because with the next Bond films and all that, I want to, like, suggest off the top of my head, like, directors I'd like to see handle a Bond film in the future.
But I also have my list of, like, people I want to see in Bond movies post, and I did pick a director for mine.
It was a very interesting choice, Marcy.
I know it is.
But I got a couple of names, because I did write a list on MSC a while ago about directors who I'd like to see make a Bond film at some point. And I'll just read a couple of them out. I like to see Danny Boyle do one, because I think that would be a really interesting choice. Also, Ji-Woon Kim, the guy behind I Saw the Devil, and yeah, as well as the upcoming The Last Stand.
He could direct it and put all the people I picked in my
exactly,
movie.
That's what I mean. He should direct it so we can get Byung Lee and the other guy's name.
I like your pick of Danny Boyle because he's dating Rosario Dawson. I don't know how, but he'll make her a yeah. he's doing a movie with her right now, and I was going to say if he directs, then she should be the next Bond girl.
Awesome. Other ones, I like to see Gareth Evans, who did The Raid, make a Bond film.
Yeah, Bond could just go to like an apartment complex and just shoot the shit out of everyone in it.
Also, Matthew Vaughn as well, because I know like X-Men First Class had a lot of Bond influences to it, and it would be pretty cool if he did a Bond film. Alex Proyas, got to give a bit of Australian love to him as well.
So you had like two names. You have like a billion names.
Well, I had 10. So.
Oh, okay.
I also want to see Tom Hooper, who did The King's Speech, because like when you think of Sam Mendes, he wouldn't be the first choice you'd think of for a Bond film, but I'm a big fan of Tom Hooper.
If he does Jeffrey Rush should be the villain.
Exactly, and he should teach Bond how to not stutter. But anyways, also Neil Marshall, who did The Descent, I think would be an interesting choice. And he could get Michael Fassbender to be in it because you know he directed Centurion, and also Mike Newell, who did Harry Potter and the Goblet of Fire, David Yates, David Yates, who did the last couple Harry Potter films, would be interesting. And my favorite one is Nicholas Winding Refn, who did Drive. That would be an interesting choice for me. And that's about it.
Okay. Does anyone want to add anything else before we say goodbye?
No, good stuff.
Good stuff. Okay. Well, that's a wrap on our Bond podcast, and it's actually gone not as long as I thought we might. So thank you to our guests, obviously, and you can find us at firstlysupermarcy.com, or you can go to the Facebooks and look up Super Podcast, and you can follow me on Twitter at twitter.com/supermarcy. And if you have any emails or complaints, send them to Bede. And Bede, where can they find you?
You can find me asking why Christmas only comes once a year to every woman I meet. But, you know, that's a whole different story.
That's a creepy thing to do, but okay.
Yep. I know. I tried to think of something very quickly, but I couldn't think of anything else. But you can also find me at my Facebook page at facebook.com/BeJamine or my Twitter page at twitter.com/BeJamine. And also keep a lookout for some pretty cool stuff that I've got coming on supermarcy.com over the next few days. I got my last two November Blogathon video reviews that I'll be posting up in the next day or so. And as well, look out for my fourth and final edition of my James Bond series for my movie Song of the Week, which should be up later today. And as well, keep a lookout for my cinema review of The Perks of Being a Wallflower, which I'm almost finished writing.
And Nick?
I edited together a special tribute to Bond, actually, for the 50th anniversary called We Have All the Time in the World. It's actually on the Joe Blow Movie Network on YouTube. I was really proud of that, and just for the 50th anniversary and for Skyfall. Also, you can reach me at Twitter at Nick_Boz. And, I've got some editing projects coming up just for the rest of the year, probably a tribute to 2012 within the next week or so. But, other than that, not too much going on.
And EJ, seeing as you've obviously never been on the podcast, where can people find you?
Well, people may know me as Puck Bond on Joe Blow on the forums and on MFC. But you can definitely reach me at my YouTube channel, which is Puck Bond 007. And got lots of videos coming. Going through my collection, going to do my James Bond section soon. And lots of cool stuff going on my YouTube channel.
Cool. And, cool. Yeah, well, actually, I forgot my other one, my Blip TV channel, which is, I think it's blip.tv/supermarcy. And you can see my wacky adventures. I do have a lengthy video about trying to marathon all of these movies, all the Bond movies and stuff. And, yeah, thanks for listening, and thanks to these guys for joining the podcast. I know that a lot of people wanted to join in for the Bond podcast, but we are trying to stick to low numbers for obvious reasons that we always talk over each other. So this one filled up pretty quickly. So, yeah. Again, yeah, thanks, guys, and hope you enjoy the next 100 episodes of the podcast. I mean, we started off with a bang with James Bond, so. And, yeah, we'll catch you all later.
Thanks, see guys. See everyone.
A cold finger beckons you to enter his web of sin. But don't go in. Golden words he will pour in your ear, but his lies can't disguise what you feel. Kiss of death from Mr. Goldfinger. Pretty girl, beware of this heart of gold. This heart is cold. Golden words he will pour in your ear, but his lies can't disguise what you feel. Kiss of death from Mr. Goldfinger.